So periodically, I like to talk to people who are much more skilled at me and human relations in general, and one such gentleman is our next guest. Thomas Gagliano is an author, a life coach, and an addiction specialist. He's been on many TV and radio shows talking about parenting and relationships. His book is The Problem Was Me, How to End Negative Self-Talk and Take Your Life to a New Level. I still don't own a copy, and I beat myself up relentlessly and mercilessly for it, also because I'm Catholic. I want to recommend Tom's podcast, The Problem Was Me, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Thomas, welcome back to SiriusXM Insight.
Thank you. And you know, my wife loved the title, The Problem Was Me. She said, you finally got that right. I said, thank you, sweetheart. I appreciate that.
Daryl Hammond has this old joke. He says his father has a little ring on the back of his neck with a cord. And when you pull it, he says, my fault. But you know, I was telling you in the break, I had the Catholic disease because with us, saying it's my fault was a virtue, the kind of cult my mother, and before my mom, you know, got sick, she did refer to the convent as a cult. She loved the convent, loved the nuns. My mother was a head nurse at a convent growing up, so I was always around nuns. The best people I've ever known in my life have been nuns, but some of them did a number on my mom. And I grew up with that model of humility and self-loathing, mm-hmm. kind of being the same thing. Mm-hmm. I was saying Jorge's not like that. He's a healthy Catholic. He's had a coming out experience. He has the gay pride parade. I have the straight shame. I'm the grand marshal of the Catholic parade.
It's got to be my fault. Right.
Yeah, but I mean, there is a line between humility and self-loathing. There is a line of saying, yes, the problem was me, and then recognizing that if there is a God, he or she probably doesn't want you hating yourself, and it's not really all that productive to spend all this time punishing yourself for your failings.
Absolutely. I went to a Catholic school, like I told you, the nuns.
That's why you're drinking now, I see.
Of course. And then when I order dinner, I ask my wife, do I like that? I like that? Oh yeah, I like that. You know, I mean, you lose yourself a little. But I'll tell you, the one thing I've learned is you need to understand the difference between being selfish and self-care. Because when you grow up a little bit confused, sometimes you're taking care of yourself, you're doing something healthy, but you got that little voice in the back of your head that you're being selfish. You need to tend to other people first.
So I thought self-esteem was the same as conceited when I was a child.
Exactly. There you go. There you go.
Look at those people who like themselves. Isn't that awful?
Right. What's wrong with
I that? I hate myself, right. And God will like me for that.
They're selfish people.
It's a religious mentality. It's the opposite of spiritual narcissism, where you feel superior to everyone.
Yep.
It's really easy to take The Problem Was Me a little too far.
Absolutely. And you know what I write in my book about how if you grow up with a God that you believe you always have to be good for first,
mm-hmm.
you're really behind the marbles right away. Because as soon as you make mistakes in your life, you're going to feel like I'm not lovable. I'm not good enough.
And that's why the best thing you can do with a kid, and I know raising one now, is to just let them know that mistakes are natural and not to be too hard on themselves and get them accustomed to shaking it off at a very young age.
Absolutely. You tell your child there's consequences when you do an action. You mm-hmm. teach them that. And you also teach that there's opportunity in mistakes. Mm-hmm. But if you give your child the message that if they make a mistake, they are a mistake, that cleanup course is going to last a lifetime. They need to know that they could fail at times,
yeah,
and not know they're a failure. That's huge. And some parents, if you're always yelling and screaming at your kid, you're going to give them the wrong message, and they're going to be afraid to try. And that's not what you want to have your kid do.
Well, I want to invite our listeners to call up, because we're going to talk about boundaries mm-hmm. for the next segment at 877-974-7487. That's 877-9-SERIOUS. Because one of the things that I find myself doing more and more on this show and my other broadcasting gigs and social media platforms is talking people off a ledge,
mm-hmm.
politically per se, which mm-hmm. is something you do all the mm-hmm. time. And you're someone who can do it for us, because we were talking in the break about boundaries, and it seems like now is a more important time than ever mm-hmm. to create healthy boundaries, both for yourself and your loved ones, as a means of time management, but also creating boundaries in an era of unprecedented information being flung at you.
100%.
It's important to be aware. It's important to know what's going on in the world. And it's also important to not let screens dominate your brain and not let the never-ending tidal wave of malfeasance and bullshit out of Washington, D.C., inform who you are as a person.
The problem is we become addicted to the media. Like any it's like an addiction. Like, you know, what is an addiction? Addiction is something that controls you. You don't control it. Okay? Addiction is something you believe you can handle, but you really can't. Addiction is something that you need other people to help you pull away from. Because you caring, can't do it yourself.
But at the same time, caring about your society.
Without a
doubt. Caring about the lies, wanting to be informed when you see the disinformation coming out, that's virtuous, I think. And so it's. I think we're all of us, even people we disagree with, are trying to find the balance of being as tuned in and knowing how to debate and knowing what the truth is. At the same time, you know, when we're old and dying in bed, it's going to be a real drag, Tom, to look back on the time we all cared about Steve Mnuchin and William Barr.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have to have that perspective as well.
But, you know, sometimes we can get to the point where it affects us so deeply that it's also affecting our children. It's affecting our spouse. It's affecting everyone around us because it's bothering us so much. And I'm not saying that it's not good to let it bother you and it's not good to do what you can to fix it. But you have to also take an inventory. How is that affecting the way I show up in the people around me? Like, am I able to surrender that, or am I just so full of anger that it's affecting the other parts of my life?
So why do you think it's easier for some people to create boundaries than for others?
It's codependency. Look, I can't create a healthy boundary if I worry so much about what the other person's thinking. Think about it. If I care about what you're feeling and I'm creating a boundary with you, it's going to be tough. So I have to create a boundary that tells me I got to take care of Tom first. Boundaries say I matter to me.
And that's not the denial of empathy for the other person.
No,
you can still care about the other person.
Absolutely. But if I care so much about the other person, it's going to infringe on the boundary I set to take care of me first.
And if you put someone else above you, well, that's just a turn off for everyone. And that's a way to trace someone away from
you. If I'm trying to fix your problems more than you're trying to fix your problems, that's what codependency is.
And if I'm trying to fix your problems more than I try to handle my own, because I'd rather fixate on you than me.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a recipe for more unhappiness and for driving the target of your affections
and
away.
And drinking a whole load of poison down. Absolutely. So I think what happens with healthy boundaries is we get to that place where we tell ourselves what's important to ourselves. What do we like about ourselves? What makes us feel good? What makes us feel sad? And to put boundaries down, I tell people all the time, short, specific, and of course, fair.
Can you give some examples? Because I understand that relationships have to have healthy boundaries if they're ever going to reach their full potential. If you're clinging to an adolescent idea of pure love, be it romantic, sexual, what have you, or even familial, and just love's going to carry us through all of this, well, you're setting yourself up for a lot of preventable heartache. So when we talk about creating healthy boundaries with loved ones, what does that mean? And what are internal boundaries?
Internal boundaries is, you know, we can't say whatever we want. We need a filter. We have to have empathy for the person we're talking to. But then we can't go the other way and not say how we feel and take care of ourselves either. So internal boundaries are what we say to other people. But I'll give you a great example.
Please.
A boundary with a child, for instance. If you don't clean your room, well, then you can't get dessert tonight. Or boundaries with an adult child. If you don't come in at the time that we agreed on, you can't go out tomorrow. So you start to make it clear that the boundary you set depends on the action they take. Boundaries. Oh, go ahead.
Well, these sound more like conditions and rewards than boundaries. So is that something you can do with yourself?
Without a doubt. But let's say boundaries in the workplace. Let's say you have a boss that likes to put his hand on your shoulder a lot. Mm. And to you, it's your boundary. That could be okay to some people. Maybe some people it's not okay.
Maybe he was the vice president and I just don't want to help the other side.
See what I mean?
Randomly.
So basically, I would appreciate if you wouldn't do that. And you don't explain it. If you're starting to explain your boundaries in detail, you're going the other way.
You're trying too hard already.
Yeah. You don't explain what makes you feel good, what makes you feel right. Again, they got to be fair and they got to be consistent.
One of the first things we taught our kid in ABA therapy was, please stop doing that. I don't like it.
Exactly. And you make it clear. And you don't have to over-explain it. That's when you start to get into the codependency, where you're trying to make the other person understand more than you need to make them understand. Because it's not about the other person. It's about you telling yourself with the boundary, it's important to me to do this. Because boundaries remind us that we are not someone else's possession.
Our guest is Thomas Galliano, life coach, author, and addiction specialist. Our number at Insight is 877-9-SERIOUS. Curious what your experience has been with boundaries, especially politically in the last couple of years. Do you have a hard time setting them, or are you too rigid in your own? And do you need to set boundaries on yourself when it comes to things like screens or information or the president's face? in our digital era. 877-9-SIRIUS. Why is it so important, Tom, that we really understand the difference between selfishness and self-care when setting boundaries? Because you could argue they're similar enough.
Well, they're really not. Because if we don't take care of ourselves, we're gonna have consequences for that, John. I see it all the time with couples that come to me, that if you're not taking care of yourself, if you're not sharing how you feel in an empathetic way, mm-hmm. in a kind way, what will happen is the person that you feel you're not being honest with, you're going to resent that person, and you will act it out in different ways. Maybe I won't come home for dinner at night. Maybe I'll go out more than I should. We act out what we're not able to express and take care of ourselves in our feelings. Now, again, it's not selfish if I tell my wife, you know, when you did this, it was hurtful. What you did was hurtful. I'm not saying you meant to do it, but I need to share that with you, because if we're not sharing our feelings here, we go into resentments. And when we go into resentments, we act out in destructive ways.
And it's powerful to include, I'm not saying you meant to hurt me.
Exactly.
Because you don't need to put someone on a defensive when you express what your needs are.
We do this all the time. I don't think every time that we have a disagreement with somebody that they're deliberately trying to hurt us.
Well, me and Jorge, yes, but otherwise,
we're
especially
but everybody else. Yeah.
We signed a declaration of codependence, actually. Let me ask you, how do you stick to the boundaries you set? Because it's one thing to think this, but we all make allowances. And again, when you're a kind and giving person, I've known many wonderful kind and giving people who wound up being kind and giving doormats.
There you go. Because again, in their messaging as a child, and it comes from childhood. If you grow up in a childhood where you believe, in order for me to be happy, I have to make my mom or dad happy first. If I'm believing that that's the way that this has to go, what I'm going to do as I grow into adulthood is I'm going to take that same thinking and I'm going to feel, well, if the only way I could be happy is if I make the other people happy first.
Yep.
And it's a time traveling process. And people will do that all the time and not even know that it's really constructed in childhood. If my needs rely on making other people happy first, I'm going to become a people pleaser. And I imagine tons of your callers and listeners can relate to being a people pleaser, not being able to say no and putting other people first.
I mean, my dad was the most giving person I ever knew. He was the most Christian person I ever knew, and he didn't know how to say no. Mm-hmm. And he wound up being a high school assistant principal, where mm-hmm. he got dumped with all the shit work. And mm-hmm. then what happens is you spend your whole life, not saying my dad was like this, but you spend your whole life being in service to others. You wind up having resentments, and you take those home with you.
And you either will, again, as an addiction specialist, you'll either act in resentments with a lot of depression and self-loathing, mm-hmm. or you'll act out resentments in destructive ways. It could be addictions, or it just could be ways where you're just defiant. Like I said before, your wife wants you to be home at 6. You're going to get home at 6:30 for no other reason that that's how you're acting out what you're not talking about.
So then what about with the news? I mean, you know, I find so many people say to me, I don't want to be obsessed with this. I don't want Trump in my head. But at the same time, people want to know facts. And I don't have to tell you, the news knows it. The news knows that we're all sitting on pins and needles. And it's
without
been 2 years of crisis ratings crack where they can say breaking news, no news yet. Like literally breaking news. The Mueller report is still not released. Things like that.
Well, here's what's scary. Even before we go to news, we have kids today. You go into restaurants, you see kids that are 6, 7 that are looking at their phone. They're becoming addicted to even the sound, the endorphins, the feel goods, and the chemicals are getting addicted to just the sound of a text at a very young age. So when you're getting addicted to just the sound of a text or an email, by the time you're a teenager, we got teenagers today. Did you ever hear of snapshot dysmorphia?
Yes.
Okay. We got teenagers today that are going for plastic surgery just to improve their selfies.
Yeah.
It's pretty scary.
Deeply. And at the same time, you know, Lincoln's parents would have been able to go out to a restaurant if they'd had an iPad for their 6-year-old. I mean, keep that in mind too. Yes. This is the new normal, you know.
The new normal. But
I mean,
if you
look at a screen too much, you might grow up to be a completely normal adult.
Well, you know, I know you look at a screen too much, and if all your needs are coming from that screen, that's why following and all these things that kids are getting addicted to, that I see more and more depression, more and more suicide rates and more anxiety.
Because it's all about the dopamine, not the serotonin. It's about the pleasure, but not the happiness.
And not having personal conversations. Able to escape discomforts by just texting and emailing someone instead of talking about your discomforts, instead of learning how to do this thing called relationships. Kids today are not learning how to deal with discomfort.
But for adults who, who again, like, need help setting up their parameters, because if all you're watching is news and there's nothing entering your mind or your heart anymore, then you're cheating yourself. But people are addicted because there's so much fear.
So fill that void in another way. Find something else to fill that void with. And again, if you can't do it on your own, get a hold of a bunch of group of people that are all trying to get away from the news and the insane drama going on and help each other make commitments not to be so addicted to the news. Go to the movies, find other outlets instead of the news, because I'm saying to you that addicts generally in the beginning don't know they're addicted to something until it becomes absolutely unmanageable.
Well, every crutch becomes the affliction.
Exactly.
Let me ask you one more question about this. How do we process the uncomfortable feelings with other people when the boundaries are initially put into place? We've only got a minute left, but it can be exciting and thrilling to say, nope, not cool. And then comes the icky part of having to live by enforcing it.
Great question. We, again, we go back to childhood. We have to learn to say no and surrender the voice that says you're a bad person if you say no. How do you get rid of that voice that says to you, if I say something that the other person doesn't like, how do I refrain from thinking I'm a horrible human being? And to me, everything is about making it a we process, not a me process, is to be able to call people that you are comfortable with, that you support, to surrender the voices that tell you you're a terrible person for saying no or saying something that makes the other person upset.
I'm going to do just that, except some of the voices that tell me I'm a terrible person are Jorge and Tatiana, who I have to work with every day. So that's awkward. But I'll put up boundaries against that. Thomas Galliano is our favorite official life coach of SiriusXM Insight and talks us off of the ledge every day. You can find Tom's podcast, The Problem Was Me, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your fine podcasts. How often do you release a new one?
About every 2 weeks.
Fantastic.
So I got 25 of them. There's plenty to look at.
Ah, beautiful. Once again, the book is The Problem Was Me, How to End Negative Self-Talk and Take Your Knife to Life to a New Level, written with Dr. Abraham Twersky. What a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Tom. We hope to see you again very soon when we return. Thanks.